It's time for Lakes, Woods, and Irons at 1380 KLIZ The Fan, featuring Colin McDonald and Chris Foley. Today's broadcast is sponsored by Breezy Point Resort, your holiday station store on Mill Avenue and Cross Lake, Maury's Market, Ernie's on Gull, The Tea Hive, Halverson Law Office, and the Legacy Courses at Craigan's. Streaming at lakeswoodsandirons.com, sponsored by Mills GM. And now here's Chris Foley and Colin McDonald for Lakes, Woods, and Irons at 1380 KLIZ, The Fan.
Welcome back to Lakes, Woods, and Irons with Chris Foley. Colin McDonald with you, 1380 KLIZ, The Fan. Now available at Podcast One and wherever podcasts are available. And thanks to our sponsor, Mills Ford and Mills GM, for our streaming today and every day. Everything's kind of archived there. We've had some great guests this summer. We're working on trying to label some of those segments for you as we wind down toward the end of our season here on the show. Chris, Captain America comes through. He hadn't won since the Masters over a year ago now. Long time between wins for Patrick Reed. His game kind of went away, which is kind of his MO a little bit. He peaks and plays well for a short time, and then can't find it. Gets a little bit like, well, there's a couple of guys there on the board that are similar. John Rahm has some trouble once in a while with getting golf game and emotions all in the same spot. Yeah. And actually, so does Patrick Reed from time to time. And, But anyway, he played well enough to win, just barely.
He played very well, and one-shot victory. One of four players under age 30 to have seven PGA Tour wins. So
yeah, nothing wrong with that.
No, pretty impressive. But making a run at the season's over in the President's Cup standings will after the Tour Championship, they'll determine the President's Cup team, which unusual this year, they don't play until December rather than typical late September. Had a great weekend. It was fun to see Abraham Answer in there trying to win his first Tour event. Friend of the show, Tom Rolfe, used to coach Abraham on the Mexican national team, so fun following him. And great weekend for Harold Varner. And Adam Scott and Jordan Spieth had great Sundays as well.
Yeah, they came charging in, and when the front runners really weren't charging, Scott and Spieth were doing a nice job. Nice to see Spieth have a good Sunday. That's fans of golf, I think, really want Jordan to get his game back, and because you just love to have four or five great players at the top of the game and really battling each other. That would be fantastic, and if he can get there. Then you really got a show, I think. Now you got Koepka, and if Spieth was the talk of the game, it would be two completely different styles of play, which would be great to watch if they both get it to the top form. And then Rory, of course, and all the other guys you can throw in there. I think everybody roots for Adam Scott, one of golf's really nice guys, and he's got a major or two under his belt, I think. Did he win a British?
Just a Masters.
Just a Masters, yeah.
It was fun. It was interesting listening to Spieth. Played the first two rounds with Matthew Wolff. And, kind of Spieth's assessment of Wolff's game and his golf swing. And I think it was great for Spieth to Jordan's been struggling with his golf swing and, maybe trying to make it perfect, and he watches Matthew Wolff with his unique move and saying, how aggressive he was and how impressive it was. And then secondly, his golf swing isn't what we'd call textbook, but how well he drives the ball and his iron play. So it might have been a good wake-up call for Spieth to play with him the first two rounds.
Yeah, good to see. And I think all those guys look up to Spieth, even though he's not that much older than they are.
Oh, for sure.
They're kind of thinking, boy, he took the world by storm at 21. Why can't we? And
no question.
So many are this year.
Yeah, no question.
Well, yeah.
McIlroy finishing sixth. He's had an incredible year. And, I was looking at some stats earlier today, and his consistency this year is as good as anybody in the last 10 years. The only player that's had, you know, statistically been better than Rory is Tiger in 2004. You know, for the season, he 10 top 10 finishes, or excuse me, 13 top 10 finishes, and he's had 17 starts. So, I mean, statistically, he's played amazing. Two wins. It feels like he hasn't played that well because of his play in the majors hasn't been as good as we our expectations are of him. But he's had an incredible year, and I would be very surprised if he doesn't win in the next 2 weeks.
Well, it's always that joke about setting the bar low, but those guys set the bar so high. Jordan Spieth, Dustin Johnson, and Rory McIlroy. I mean, if they don't win, people go, boy, he wasn't very good.
Yeah, exactly.
Those three have to win, really.
Yeah. So,
and I'm sure Koepka's going to be the same way now.
Yeah, no question. I mean, he falls off this weekend, and it's like the world's coming to an end. He's leading after 36 holes, and very rare that he doesn't, you know, hold on for a top 2, 3, 4 finish when he's in that position. But
yeah, Tiger really struggles on opening day, and then his back bothers him, and can't play day two. So. The biggest draw in golf, certainly, ever, probably.
Yeah, and, for sure.
When he's not available, that hurts the game as well. You just hope the best for Tiger, but he's just fragile compared to what he once was.
Yeah, it's I think we'll see through the rest of his career. That's going to be it'll be hit or miss, and depending on how his body is reacting, will be. You know, we'll either see some really good Tiger play because it's obviously in there, or struggles, which we've seen since the Masters, unfortunately.
Yeah, we sure have. We've got a couple of great guests. We're going to have the author of Being the Common Man on with us, Common Man Dan Cole, who a lot of you hear right here on 1380, Monday through Friday at noon. One of the great golf lovers of Minnesota, certainly, and really anywhere. And then Mike Bender, Chris.
Yeah, Mike, we've had on the show a couple times, but has taught multiple major champions, including Zach Johnson and Lee Jansen and a few others, played the tour himself. One of the great minds in golf, and really looking forward to talking to him about, we had a lot of slow play controversy this past weekend.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about Mike's book, Golf's 8 Second Secret, and kind of about pre-shot routine and his take on some of the slow play.
Good. Sounds like good.
Yes.
We'll be back with those right after this. You're listening to Lakes, Woods, and Irons on 1380 KLIZ.
You're listening to Lakes, Woods, and Irons with Chris Foley and Colin McDonald at 1380 KLIZ, The Fan.
Welcome back to Lakes, Woods, and Irons with Chris Foley, Colin McDonald with you, 1380 KLIZ, The Fan, and streaming at lakeswoodsandirons.com, and also available now on Podcast One. Got a fun guest this morning. A lot of you fan listeners are very up to date on who this is. Common Man Dan Cole joins us today, a golf lover from about as far back as he can remember, I think. And welcome to the show, Dan. We sure appreciate it.
That's good to be here. You know, Jesse Ventura gave me the proclamation back in 2001. I'm the official, unofficial ambassador for Minnesota golf.
Yes, you are.
You beat me to the punch. I was just going to ask you about that comment.
Yeah, well, it was Ventura, when he was working at the radio station before he was elected governor, he decided to run for office. And because of the equal time rules, we had to remove him from the air. And so I jokingly went up to him before he left. I said, now, if you win, you need to make me the official, unofficial ambassador of Minnesota golf. He goes, you got it, Common. Now, I don't know if he kept any other campaign promises, but the only one that mattered was that one, and he kept it. He right. had to be the proclamation between the 9th green and the 10th tee box at the TPC of the Twin Cities.
So, I love it.
It was a lot of fun. It was pretty cool.
Yeah. I don't know if we've ever had a more interesting governor. I don't know how effective, but certainly not many more interesting.
No, well, you know, I think he did accomplish some things, but I don't know how much. This between you and me and your listeners, I think Tim Penny might have been running the governor's office at that point. I think Tim Penny was a very close advisor to Governor Ventura, and I think that when I don't know this for a fact. I'm just guessing. But I think when he really needed some advice on things, I think he went to Tim a lot and got some advice. So, Penny was a pretty, whether you like his politics or not, he's a pretty sharp guy. So,
yeah.
And there were so many people that thought that the state was going to crumble and fall into the ocean, even though we're, thousands of miles away when Jesse was elected. But there's enough checks and balances in the world. I think we came out of it okay.
Yeah, I think so too. I was lucky enough to have him on. Because his football team was playing Brainerd that year in the quarterfinals, and he was nice enough to come on right after he'd been elected, before he was actually governor. So, and I saw him play with Arnie when Deacons opened up. That was fun.
Yes, yep.
They were quite a bit of fun. How's the radio show? I know is good. I listened to that. How's the golf game coming?
It's up and down day to day, good and bad. Chris can attest to this. You can feel like he got things going, and the swing's kind of oily, and he can change literally. Not only in a month or a week, but even around, even hole to hole.
Okay,
I get it around. I try to keep her in the fairway. If the short game's sharp, if I'm making a few putts, I can throw something in the mid to upper 70s, but get a little wayward and the putter's cold, I'm going to shoot in the low to mid 80s. So my 10-shot swing is 75 to 85, which is quite the swing, but I guess it's better than 85 to 95.
Yeah, it's very much. That's my 10-shot swing, 85 to 95 this year. I've digressed to that for this season.
Common, you got to play in the pro-am of the 3M championship. Tell us about that experience.
Well, I had played and won many, many years ago, I think, the old Burn It, and I don't even remember it very well, and I don't even know if we had a pro with us. If we did, I don't recall who it was, but this was a lot of fun. We had two different pros. I think now they only require them to play 9 holes. And so we had, Tyler Dawson was my second pro and my first pro. Why am I blanking now? What is his name? Young kid. What's interesting is these guys, Chris, as you know, if he would have walked up to you, you would have thought he might be an outside services guy. They were both only 5'7". I checked their Wikipedia pages when I 5'7". They're no taller than I am. They're slight of build, yet they can hit the ball 300 yards. And they were both really delightful to play with. They didn't, just kind of drift off on their own and ignore the foursome after the introductions. They talked on the tee boxes and offered advice if you asked for it. So it was a lot of fun. I mean, the galleries weren't huge, but it was a kick. Probably what I like best is I had a 7:23 tee time, and Austin Cook was the other kid's name. Austin.
Oh yeah,
and he's won on tour before. But I'm I got a 7:23 tee time. Brooks Koepka and Phil Mickelson both have the first tee times of the day. They want to get it over with. They're on 1 and 10. So Koepka's on the range, and he goes over to the putting green. So I hurry up and go over there and have my caddy so I could put pictures on Twitter and on my program page of me right next to Brooks Koepka on the putting green. I have one where he's reaching in the hole to grab a ball, and I've lagged mine up really close. So we're both reaching down for a ball. He's grabbing one from the hole. I'm grabbing one from right next to it. And the caption basically is, number one player in the world, along with the number 1,386,432nd best player in the world. So that was kind of a kick, but it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it.
The dates for that this year were a bit tough, I think, for Minnesota, being 4th of July week. But next year it's moving to the week after the Open Championship. You think that'll have an impact on the event?
I think fans will come out regardless of when it is, because even the 4th of July, the crowds were pretty big. I think, not everybody goes to the cabin, but I think it might improve the gallery somewhat. I'm more concerned about the field, because it'll be after the Open Championship, and all the majors are over, and I think it's the weekend right after. So how many players that are just saying, I need a week off now. We finished all the majors. I just come back from across the pond. I'm not going to play. So I don't know if it may affect the field in that way. Of course, that being said, this actually turned up pretty, I think the way the tournament played out here, those of us in the Twin Cities got to see some of the new young guns play. We got
to see
the kid. We got to see who were the other two? The
Colin Mankara.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And who finished? Why am I, again,
and Bryson DeChambeau.
Well, DeChambeau, he's been around a while, but, you know, we got to see some of these new young guys that are going to be mainstays on tour for a long time. So, you know, I don't think it'll hurt it too much, other than a couple of the bigger names might pass on it because of where it's located on the tour schedule.
I was just looking at your golf as a four-letter word chapter in your book, the Being the Common Man, which people can still get a hold of, I'm sure, Dan. Is that correct?
They can. Oh, thanks for the plug. Yeah, commonmanbook.com. Only $25. That includes shipping, handling, tax, title, license, and gratuity as well. Yeah.
And a real live autograph, if you're lucky.
If you want one, sure.
You were coming home from Brainerd, and I was interested to, of course, go to that chapter. You had the world by the tail. That was maybe your best time in golf, when you had a 69, and the following week you had a great weekend in Brainerd, and you were flying high.
Well, you know, it is interesting. You do fool yourself in this game. You know, I picked it up when I started working at the family. I mean, I played as a kid where, you know, I had to mix and match clubs. You know, I always tell people I probably grew up in a upper lower class family or a lower middle class. My dad played, but there wasn't a lot of money for the kids to play, so I didn't do much more than a few executive courses. Started to work at the fam, fell in love with the game and started to play quite a bit. And, you know, I worked pretty hard on my game. I got that over-the-top swing, but, you know, it's not too pronounced. And, you know, up until that 69, my best score had been a 76 at the Wilds, which still was a pretty good score. Well, out of nowhere, I played Creek's Bend, a Gold Strand course over there in Prior Lake, and we played from 6,000 yards because I was playing with a young kid and his dad and his neighbor that listened to the show a lot. And next thing I know, I shoot a 69. I go to Brainerd and throw three consecutive. Well, then I go to the Wilds 2 days later and shoot a 72. Then I go to Brainerd and go three 77s in a row. And of course, I fooled myself to thinking, well, you know what? I'll never not shoot in the 70s again.
Right.
That's the kiss of that.
That's not how golf works. Yeah, that's not how it works. And I've had my up and downs forever since then. But yeah, that was a great week of golf. And I was really thinking, boy, I've got this thing figured out now, you know.
I had it semi-figured out last year. And Chris asked me how the game was, our second show this year in the spring. And I said, well, if I don't quit, you know, I got to get better, or I'm going to quit. And he had me on the track, man, last week, and I think he improved me. If I can just remember a few of his easy pointers, that's the key for me. Don't be as dumb as I usually am.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I tell people all the time, one of the lines I use, if I shoot something like an 85 or an 88, I say, if the golf god whispered in my ear that I'd never shoot better than this again, I'd never play again, which is probably an exaggeration. But, you know, everybody approaches the game differently. I know Chris has his views and you have yours and mine. I like to at least have a competent game. I don't need to, you know, you're never going to keep shooting a better score every single time you play. But, you know, one of my playing partners that I play a lot of golf with says, show me an improving golfer and I'll show you a happy golfer. And I think that's true. If you're scoring or improving, you like the game. If you're not, you can get a little grouchy and sometimes feel like, why am I out here? You know, and I think as we talk about growing the game and not as many people playing anymore, and there's all sorts of different reasons, young kids and social media, and you know, they don't pick up the game as much. And I know it takes a long time and it can be costly, but the other thing is too, I think what some people don't think about is not only does it take a lot of time, you know, if you're playing a weekend and it's a 4 hour round and you're away from the family and, you know, that gets to be a bit much and then it can be costly. But then if you add into that, and I'm not very good at it, I think that does turn some people off from the game. You know?
I think the young player, I think Chris will attest, cause he teaches a lot of kids, they really like the long game now. So many of the young players on tour can just mash it, and young guys get out there and they take some fun in that. Chris likes speed in the swing at a young age, and figures you can teach him a lot of things, but you can't necessarily teach club head speed. So he kind of likes the power game that the young kids love.
Well, I think you're right. As a matter of fact, I was speaking of the 3M Open. I didn't go to every round, so I was watching, I think, on TV on Saturday or Sunday, and I heard one of the commentators talking about their short game, and someone was putting a couple of feet off the green on the fringe, And whoever the commentator was, and why I can't remember, maybe it was Faldo, I don't know, but somebody said, well, what's happened is, because they work on their long game so much, a lot of these guys don't work on all the intricacies of the short game, and so they don't trust themselves as much because it is a power game. It's like, can I hit the ball 300 yards off the tee, 320, and have short irons into the green? And the short game maybe doesn't get as much attention. I mean, Chris, you can probably attest to this. I see this all the time. I don't visit the range often, but if I do and a guy's getting ready to go up for his round, he'll hit a bucket of balls and he'll hit the driver every single shot.
Yeah, exactly.
I got another club. And again, you do hit the driver. Let's say you hit it on all fours and fives. Well, you're going to hit it 14 times. And then what I see is they'll hit that same shot. It'll go slice right, slice right, slice right. They'll hit one straight, and then they'll slice right and slice right. And so they really don't have anything to work on. And I know, Chris, as a teaching professional, I'm sure you would agree with this. I think you have to have something to bang balls just to bang balls. You're not going to accomplish much there. As a matter of fact, if anything, you'll just frustrate yourself. That's why you should see, if you want to take the game serious, you should see a teaching pro that can relate to you. I think, Chris, I find that I like going to different pros just to see how they teach. And I think they're all good, but some people have a different way of teaching than others. You have to find a guy that you can relate to and explains the game to you. And then you have something to work on when you're on the range.
Absolutely. We talk about it on the show a lot. I always say, are you exercising or are you practicing? And most people go to the range and exercise.
Yep. That's a good way to say it. That is a good way to say it. You need something to work on to improve your game. Otherwise, you are just exercising.
Absolutely. Dan, you off air, we were talking a little bit about fantasy football. And now that sports gambling is going to be legal in all 50 states, there's a lot of talk about fantasy golf and gambling on golf. What do you have any thoughts on that? And is it going to catch on and be big?
Oh, I think it will. I mean, people do. I've never been. I mean, when I was a youngster, in my late teens, early 20s, we used to play penny ante poker games all the time. I really enjoyed it. And I don't mind going to a casino once in a while and playing a little blackjack, but I never got hooked on the sports betting thing personally. I always tell people I don't like to bet on something I can't control. Even though I would lose to Chris Foley, I'd still rather play him for a dollar a hole, knowing I've got some control over that. I got a club in my hand. Once you make that bet, you don't know if some quarterback's going to throw a pick six late in the game that you didn't see coming, you know? So I've never been a sports bettor, but I think it will be big. And, you know, I don't know. I still think football will be the very best. Fantasy football will still be, people betting on football games and basketball games will probably be the most, but I bet there'll be a lot of people betting on golf. Sure, you know, you see the odds on the different players who you think are going to win, and I think people love to go to the sports book.
Just to wrap it up, Dan, nobody remembers their rounds of golf like you do and recount them beautifully for your fans. You had at the Pro-Am, you had described your tee shot on the first hole beautifully on your show. Would you want to recount that this morning
bit? I hit it. Well, you know, when I do recount my game, when the late Dark Star asked me where we play and where to hit it on run, I always say right at the gut. And I did at the program. I hit it right at the gut. The only problem was it only went 40 yards. I topped it. It went straight into the thick rough, and then I topped my next shot. And I didn't play very well in the program, and more than anything, it really wasn't the difficulty of the course, just because they had the amateurs up, you know, forward tees. We were playing at, you know, 6,300 yards, whatever. I was just trying too hard to play too well. And, you know, it's like you got to find that fine line. I think Chris could probably attest to this too. If you're trying too hard and you're gripping the club too tight and you're trying to hit it hard, you're going to struggle. You got to just relax. But, yeah, I hit it right up the gut all right. I just hit it only 40 yards up the gut.
But then you ground out a bogue, didn't you?
Oh, well, that was, yeah. I'm standing over and by the way, I think Austin Cook has since fired his caddy, Kip. I don't know Kip's last name. I've heard Kip is legendary on tour. Kip's a very funny guy. But I just heard recently, about 2 weeks ago, apparently Austin Cook decided to part ways with him. But I'm standing over a downhill 12-foot putt for double bogey. We've already finished the hole. They don't even need my putt. And Kip looks at me and he goes, are you telling me you're going to grind out a 12-foot putt for double bogey? And I go, watch me. And I buried it. I did. I ground it out. He also had one other line that was really funny. We were playing on number three, which was playing as a par five for us, but it was a par four for the pros. And all four of the amateurs hit beautiful shots right up the middle, all the fairway. And Kip announces to all of us, he goes, you know, I've played in hundreds of these, and that's the best four amateur shots I've ever seen. Well, then the four of us all end up hitting awful second shots, and then he timed it perfectly. He said, you know, I've played in hundreds of these programs, and those are the four worst second shots I've ever seen. So, yeah, it was. We had a lot of fun. It was a lot of laughs. And Kip will... He'll pick up a loop somewhere. Trust me, he's got that reputation.
Yeah, Kip Henley, he is one of the legendary caddies in golf, and one of the best Twitter feeds in golf as well. He can tell a story like almost no other.
Correct.
We left you 5 minutes to prep for your show, about the usual amount of time. Correct.
You got that right. You do listen. Thanks, guys, for having me. I really appreciate
Thanks
it.
Thanks a lot, Common.
Thanks, Common. Appreciate it.
You bet. Take care.
That's a Common man, Dan Cole. The Fan, 12 until 3 every day right here on 1380 KLIZ. Tune in and see him weekdays. Hear him, I should say, Monday through Friday. You're listening to Lakes, Woods, and Irons on The Fan.
You're listening to Lakes, Woods, and Irons with Chris Foley and Colin McDonald at 1380 KLIZ. The Fan.
Want to welcome to the show Mike Bender from Orlando, Florida. Mike is the 2009 PGA Teacher of the Year and consistently ranked among the top couple teachers in Golf Digest Top 100 list. He's a teacher of many multiple major winners, including Zach Johnson, Lee Jansen, and many other tour players. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you on, as always. Multiple guest on our show, so I appreciate you coming on and sharing your knowledge. But wanted to get you on. We, last week on the PGA Tour, slow play really came to. It was more the story than the tournament itself, with Brooks Koepka and Justin Thomas and a couple other players kind of calling out Bryson DeChambeau, and became kind of a unusual on tour that we have some spats going on, but
it's funny because I mean, you know, there's over the years, you know, there's been, you know, a few slow players, and every once in a while it kind of comes to a head and there's some sort of an incident. So it's kind of happened again here just recently.
You know, I think it's much more our awareness of it is much more prevalent because there's so much more golf available. You can watch every group on the internet and that type of thing. So it's people are more aware of it now, maybe, and it's probably not as big a problem on tour as it just is in general everyday play.
Well, the tour has rule. You know, they have guidelines of how fast you've got to play, and they pretty much stick to it. And it's funny because I remember I my first tour event. I mean, many many years ago when I four spot qualified. I was in the very first group, and there wasn't anybody ahead of us, and we played in 2 hours and 1 minute, and in 2 hours and 1 minute on the front nine, and we were like a group ahead of the people behind, and one of the tour officials came up to me and said, hey, Mike, you're playing a little slow, or your group is, you guys got to speed it up. And I thought, wow, this is amazing, you know, so... Goes way back for sure.
Yeah, for sure. So, you wrote a book a year or two ago called Golf's 8 Second Secret: What Separates Golf's Greatest Champions, and looked at multiple major champions or everybody who's won more than five majors, and came to some conclusions about what they do as they approach a shot. And I want to talk to you about that. Tell us about the book.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was pretty interesting once we went back, and because the people that have won five major championships or more obviously know how to handle pressure. And, you know, what happens, you know, under pressure is people don't want to make mistakes. They start slowing down. I mean, it's very evident when somebody has a putt on the last hole to win the tournament or something. A lot of times they'll take, you know, twice as long to check. They check the putt from every angle and things like this. So, you know, so it was kind of a, it was a study by us and, Michael Mercer and myself on, you know, was there any commonality, in other words, in those great players and them being able to handle pressure coming down the stretch and everything. And so it was very interesting, and it was really fun to write, and something that every golfer, no matter what level you're at, can really learn something from this.
Right. So what were the things that you found, Mike?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, what you have is we divided up the pre-shot routine is something that is very undertaught. Matter of fact, in my career, it's one of my biggest regrets that I didn't teach this to all of my students sooner. I was always under the impression, hey, I'll get them to a good level where they're really hitting the ball well. Then maybe we'll go on the golf course and check out their routine and things like that. Yeah. But really, if you have a good pre-shot routine, no matter what handicap you are, you're going to play better. You're going to play better than you would if you didn't have a good routine.
Yes.
And when we talk about routine, it's basically three parts. And the first part is, you know, is getting the information, you know, when you get to the ball, how far is it, what the wind's doing, what the lie is, you know, all that information that leads into a choice of what club you're going to hit. And once you have that club selection and you know the type of shot you're going to hit, then the second part would be rehearsing your swing and kind of visualizing that shot and seeing that shot. And then the last part, which is where the 8 second comes in, is once you've decided on the club, once you know what you're going to do, really the only thing left is execution. And the question is how long should that take?
Yeah.
And really not very long, right? But what happens is, people get up over the ball and they tend to let interference come in, fear, doubt, indecision, too many thoughts on their golf swing. And so they get over the ball and they take a lot of time and they really don't make golf a reactionary game or sport like everything else. Like if I go play basketball or you and I do, we don't have time to think.
Right.
But in golf, you know, you got all that time and there's no shot clock. I wish there was a shot clock in golf because I think everyone would actually play better because they'd be forced into reacting as opposed to using their brain too much, you know, to think too many thoughts. And so, you know, we really do a lot of work now in training people how to, when they get over that ball, like the great champions, the things they had in common was, number one, when they set the club down behind the ball, they they were in constant motion. So in other words, they set the club down, they put their feet in, they were waggling, their bodies were moving, and they completed their swing, which means they took it away and finished their swing in under 8 seconds. And it's remarkable how consistent they were at doing that.
You know, I've in working with some players, we've timed their pre-shot routine, and you know, a lot of people say, God, I don't think I can do it. I don't think I can be over the ball less than 8 seconds. And it's amazing, really, when you're over it. That's plenty of time to be able to pull the trigger. And for most people, can do it much easier than that.
Yeah, it really is. But you know, it's like anything else. You have to practice it a little bit. And I tell people, you know, hey, when you go warm up, you're warming up and you're hitting shots and everything. But the last 5 or 10 balls that you hit before you leave to go to the first tee, go through that last part of your routine on every ball. And so it starts to put you into more of what I call the play mode versus, you know, the practice mode.
Yes.
And you know, there's physical steps to that you know, a good teaching pro can help you with. And the people listening out there, I would recommend that you get with somebody that can kind of show you those steps. And once you have that routine, then it's like anything else. You just need to practice it a little bit, and it becomes very natural. And it's really the greatest way to combat any time you're nervous, you know, or anxiety or whatever. But if you stick to your routine and go right through it, then you're going to have a much better chance of hitting a good shot.
Right. You know, if you do any research on decision making everybody says your first instinct is always your best decision. And for instance, Malcolm Gladwell's book, Blink, you know, there's case study after case study of that splits, you know, that first instinct is what you go with. So the less time you spend over the ball, the better chance you have over, I would think.
Yeah, and you have to trust what you train, right? So we train on the range, we train at lessons, what have you. We do drills and things. So when it's time to play golf, you have to allow yourself to play with what you have. And the course management, people talk about course management. Well, course management is making decisions based on how you're hitting the ball at that time. And so if you use good course management skills, you're going to have your best rounds. You're going to play your best golf. And I think everybody would say that, you know, whatever your best score has ever been in your life, there's no way that you were out there thinking of, you know, five different things during your golf swing. So, you know, but that's what happens when, you know, it's natural because you go out there, you hit a couple of bad shots, and the first thing you're thinking about is, oh, what do I got to do? What do I got to change in my swing? Or what do I got to think about to not hit another bad shot? And that starts to interfere again with the routine process and just letting it, so-called just letting it happen.
Mike, one of the things that I've always talked to about with players is, you know, the difference between the elite player and the average player is they have the same anxieties, you know, going into a shot if they're, you know, they got to carry it over water, or there's out of bounds on one side of the fairway or whatever it is. But the difference is they have awareness of their thinking, and they've developed mechanisms to redirect that thinking into more positive thoughts. And are there any things that you recommend or teach to players to help them redirect those thoughts or things when they get over the ball?
Right. I mean, there are. And a lot of just a real good example would be, let's say I get up over a shot and I'm afraid the ball's going to go to the right and maybe there's out of bounds or water over there. I tell my students, you know what, if you're worried about a shot, a particular shot, then I would turn it into a positive and make the golf ball go the direction you're afraid of it going. So in other words, I'm just going to aim more left, a lot more left. I'm going to give myself plenty of room to make it go right, and then I'm just going to make it go right. I'm going to let it do what it wants to do anyway, or what I'm afraid of it doing, because now I'm on the offense. And guys like Bubba Watson are a great example. I mean, Bubba Watson aims in places you can't even imagine. And if he hit the ball where he was aiming, he'd be out of bounds or, you know, whatever. But he curves the ball back in play because if he didn't, you know, he would be out of bounds. So he puts himself on the offense all the time when he's on the tee box and hitting these wild shots. So not that everybody has to play, you know, giant curves in their golf game, but sometimes under pressure, it's easier to curve a ball more than less. And so just go ahead and let it go that way. So things like that, there's little tricks and things like that that can turn something into a, you know, a challenge as opposed to worrying about it and, you know, trying to aim down the middle and hope it doesn't go too far right or too far left.
Yeah, that's such a great point in that, you know, we all have the dispersion to all of our shots, and we've got, you know, whatever that dispersion is with, say, our driver. And if you have a good idea of that, your aim maybe it shouldn't be, say, center of the fairway. Your aim should be to get that, if there's out of bounds right, aiming far enough left so if you curve it out into your dispersion, it's still in play.
Right. And that's kind of the value these days of, you know, they have these TrackMan launch monitors and different other brands of launch monitors that can actually show you if you hit 20 balls with driver, can give you a dispersion pattern to where you can say, okay, you know, my average dispersion is 35 yards or maybe it's 60 yards, whatever it may be. Then you can take that information, and that goes back to course management again. Then you can take that information and you can aim in places that will allow you to give you the greatest chance of keeping that ball in play.
Absolutely.
Yep.
So, Mike, going back to that, you know, the first stage of the pre-shot routine, the information gathering stage, you know, I think one of the reasons play tends to be so slow at, you know, on daily play, on a weekend at a local golf, most people don't start that process until they get to the golf ball.
Well, yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, with playing in golf carts, what happens is, if, you know, you'll see people go to, there'll be two people and they'll go to the first ball, and then the person that's riding or driving or the other person sits there and waits for that person to hit, and then they drive over to the other ball. You know, it's just, you know, it, you know, being able to get to your ball, get the yardage, you know, while someone else is maybe hitting, you know, really can speed up your whole group by a lot.
Absolutely.
You know, and yeah, just getting more prepared earlier. And so then when that person hits their shot, half the time when it's in the air, I'm already, you know, going into my second, third part of the routine where I'm just getting ready to hit it and go. So, you know, that makes a big difference.
Absolutely. Well, Mike, that's great stuff. Mike, you've got a great, you've got one of the best golf Instagram accounts out there. You're always, almost every day you post some type of, something that came up in a lesson or a, you know, a golf tip. Tell us about that, and what's your address for that?
Well, it's Mike Bender Golf on Instagram, and, you know, we've had a lot of fun with that, and you know, Instagram is obviously it's a great vehicle to kind of share your information. You know, and even though they're like minute videos, I mean, you can still get a lot out there, and
yeah.
you know, and it's you know, fun to be able to do that on a regular basis, and I've got a really good, great person that helps me, and he answers all of the direct messaging that people call in, you know, that come in with, and then he posts some. What we try to do is, once we have a topic when we're talking about something, then if you go to the stories part, which is a lot of pictures of tour players demonstrating what we talk about, so it gives it some credibility, and it's just been really eye-opening for us to be able to do that and watch it grow and reach a lot of people. It's been fun.
No, it's really great stuff. So, well, Mike, I really appreciate you coming on the show as always and sharing your knowledge, and that was some great information about pre-shot routine and getting ready to hit a golf shot. So,
yeah, thanks, Chris, and I just again encourage everybody. It's really, you really want to get better at golf, you need to have a solid routine.
No question.
And it's very much worth working on, for sure. So thanks again. I really appreciate being on.
Thank you, Mike. That was Mike Bender from Lake Mary, Florida, and owner of the Mike Bender Golf Academy.
You're listening to Lakes, Woods, and Irons with Chris Foley and Colin McDonald at 1380 KLIZ, The Fan.
Welcome back to Lakes, Woods, and Irons with Chris Foley. Mac with you, 1380 KLIZ, The Fan. Available now at Podcast One as well, and also streaming at lakeswoodsandirons.com with shows archived there for you as well. Thanks to our friends at Mills Ford and Mills GM for that. Chris, I threatened to quit early in the year, and we got together, I think, once for just a brief time, but we had a little bit longer time on Saturday to have a real lesson, a half hour or so, maybe a little more. Saw some things. I've been having quite a bit of trouble with my game, really. I had a couple of good nine-hole scores, but nothing to write home about for over 18 over the whole summer, really, so, which is odd for me. So mistakes I've made, and maybe not playing enough, for one thing, to get the consistency of it. But let's just we did TrackMan, and you reviewed the TrackMan footage with me after, and maybe we'll post that too. I think we can get Josh to help us out with that. Yeah, it was interesting. It always is when
sure.
You're such a taskmaster. You know, you make it so hard on a guy. You can just review them. My grip is always I kind of reset back to my strong grip, I guess, on my right hand underneath.
Right,
and which is always kind of been something I've gone back to. It wasn't as bad as when you first corrected me a few years ago, but certainly getting too far underneath. And then anyway, we can kind of review that. What do you think in general?
Yeah, you know, we all of us, no matter what level you're at, we all tend to go back to what our tendencies are. And we all kind of have a, you know, thumbprint of our golf swing, so to speak. And when we get off, we go back to those things. And the golf swing is really a chain reaction. And it really starts with the setup. And in your setup, your tendency is always to get your right hand a little too strong or underneath the handle, which when you take the club away in the takeaway, what happens when the right hand is too much underneath, the club face gets closed. And so that just leads to when the club face gets closed, the club is going to tend to get steep in the backswing. And when it gets steep in the backswing, for you, you have a tendency to come down too steep, or the direction your swing angles too much to the left, and then you end up hitting either slices to the right or pull hooks. Pulls hooks. So you know, really we had to get your hand in a little more neutral position, your right hand, and then get the club working a little more up with your wrist. And then the big thing for you is to, from waist height to the top, flatten the swing and get the club in a position where it makes it much easier in your downswing to bring the club back where you're hitting the ground and the ball in the right place with a, you know, fairly neutral path and face angle, so you can hit, you know, little draws or, you know, straighter shots.
Yeah, I think over the years I've been able to correct, maybe when I was younger, athletically enough to get the driver where I wanted it to go generally. I'm a pretty long hitter, and like we joked about with Common, you know, one of those guys who would go out to the driving range and hit, 20 drivers and a wedge and then head for the course, you know. So that was a little bit more of an adjustment. Probably a similar problem, but able to adjust. Now I'm a little older for one thing. But some of those tips, the takeaway was still pretty good. That was from a tip last year. But they're pretty easy tips, really. Once you get somebody on track, man, and they take a look at it, it's going to be, for me, it'll be that the forearms, when you're saying from the waist up, to get it to where you can still see it, just, you know, three-quarter takeaway or half, it's pretty easy to see, okay, that's what he wants me to do. You can almost look at it while you're swinging and think, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think for you, the biggest thing is, you know, when you don't play much, it's a lot harder for you to find your timing, and that's been the case for you this year. You haven't been able to get out much, especially early in the year. So it's harder to find that timing, and when you can't find the timing, your errors are going to show up more frequently.
Yeah, and you can kind of see you can see the takeaway. You can do that by yourself without hitting the ball, and then you can see to there. And then the backswing kind of takes care of itself once you get your forearms to a certain spot in the swing.
Yeah, exactly. If you can get it to about halfway back in your swing in a good position, the second half will tend to take care of itself.
Yeah. Yep. So people should come see you, right?
we would like that. We like helping people with it.
Yeah.
Game.
Yeah, we're getting too close to the end of August as we speak, but still plenty of time to improve your golf game, really fall golf in the Brainerd Lakes area, some of the best golf summer fall golf.
You know, the next 6 to 8 weeks are you know, prime time for us in Brainerd, and you know, our weekend golf is extremely busy in September, but you know, to get out during the week, there's a lot more availability, and you know, we've got these great fall days coming up that are just the best time of the year to play.
And remind everybody also to come on out to Craigens for the to see the pros there. The guys who possibly future pros for sure are going to be playing, and that'll be fun.
Yeah, we got as the event gets closer, we've had a few more pros sign up and register. And boy, I think people are going to be surprised at the quality of play if they come out and see it. And we got some great young players playing.
So the Pro-Am then the 20th of August, then the pros have a two-day tournament this year. That's one day longer than last year, 21st and 22nd. The Brainerd Lakes Showcase, the CRMC Brainerd Lakes Showcase. So, yeah, that's coming up and should be a lot of fun. They also have the Prince concert on that Monday night
that's
up at
right.
Craig, and so that'll be a lot of fun too. So good opportunity for some great golf. Chris, thanks for the tips, and people can get a hold of you and make lesson times through the late summer, early fall, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. We're here every day, and looking forward to getting people out on the lesson tee.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Mac.
That's Chris Foley. I'm Mac, and we'd like to thank our great guest, Mike Bender, and also the common man, Dan Cole. His books are available online, Being the Common Man, by Dan Cole, as you might guess. So thanks, a couple great guests. You've been listening to Lakes, Woods, and Irons on 1380 KLIZ.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.